Welcome to the Ladies of Liverpool podcast.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
Ladies of Liverpool.
With Leanne Campbell.
Well, I hope you are ready to be inspired. This woman is something else. Let me introduce you to Irene. Now, Irene has been a police officer for 25 years. But not only that, she climbed the ranks and became the first black female inspector. And it only happened here in Liverpool, didn't it? She did it. She works for Merseyside Police. Well, she did do for many years. She's doing lots of different things now. But I think we need to speak to Irene to find out all the obstacles she had to overcome, whether it's race or gender, whatever was going on all those years back that made her the person that she is today. We need the inside goss. You are going to love this. So sit back, relax. Let me introduce you to Irene Affle.
Ladies of Liverpool.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
So I can't wait to hear people's feedback after they've listened to this one. I just know they're going to love you because we were doing a talk, weren't we, down by the Albert Dock to young girls, trying to help them to aspire to do great things and widen their horizons. And there we met, and within 10 minutes, I was like, I don't want to listen to anything else. I just want to listen to Irene's story. So now I get my chance to hear all about it and ask the questions I wanted to ask. So Irene, first thing people need to know about you is that you were the first female black inspector at Merseyside Police. Yeah. Now, when was that? How many years ago was that?
Gosh, that was back in 2003.
That is bizarre, isn't it? That it didn't happen until 2003.
I was so surprised because, as you know, Liverpool's a very diverse city, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, and where I grew up was incredibly diverse. Mm-hmm. And I was really surprised when I found that out because I didn't know. I mean, I didn't join the police to achieve that. I joined the police because I wanted to do a good job. Mm-hmm. And when I found that out, I was approached by a local historian who told me that that was the case. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Because I would have assumed there definitely would have been people there before me. But when I looked at the hierarchy, wasn't.
That is just bizarre. The whole thing just blows my mind. So there you are. You're holding this position. You're the women in your life must have been so proud.
Oh, yeah, yeah. My mum was absolutely, like, totally blown away and over the moon. And all my family were, really. They were all, like, totally, like, really proud of me and stuff. And I was like, I haven't done anything, you know.
just doing my job.
Yeah. But they were really proud, yeah. Really
well, you
proud.
Spoke a lot about your mum when we were doing our talk. And she seems to be the wind beneath your wings. She pushed you to do things. Can you tell everyone what I heard about your story about growing up and how your mum was such a huge part of making you the woman that you are today?
Yeah, I mean, my mum, she's an amazing woman. She's a tower of strength. I don't know how she did what she did. I mean, you know, she brought three kids up on her own. Dad, unfortunately, took to the drink, was an alcoholic, and he was violent. So she suffered beatings at his hands and stuff, and we had to flee the house ultimately. We were homeless for a short time. We were squatting in, like, an empty properties around around Wavertree, where we were growing up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it must have been a horrifying time for her with three young kids still in primary school and, you know, sort of not knowing how she's going to put a roof over our heads. And eventually she did. She got a roof over our heads. We got a tenancy and we moved to Toxteth.
Yeah.
And we got, you know, a masonette and, you know, she built a life. She worked two jobs to keep, you know, keep us in school and stuff like that and put food on the table, clothes on our back. I mean, she didn't have much, but what she had, you know, she gave to us. And For me, I've got one child and I find that hard work, but to have three, I just think it's incredible and to do that on her own.
What a weight on her shoulders, Irene.
Huge weight on her shoulders.
Yeah.
But one thing she did say, you know, to all of us, she instilled in all of us was that education was our way to out of poverty and into sort of freedom, if you like.
So did you take that on board while you were growing up? You focused in school?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Gosh, in school, I mean, I loved school, which helped.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved learning, so I always excelled at all my all the subjects that I chose. I was top of my class for most of my subjects.
Yeah.
I took my maths at O level a year early because I was so advanced in maths.
And this is the child that was homeless for a time, whose father went missing, that you were struggling financially. And against all those odds, you were still performing at such a level in school.
Because I loved it, you know. I think it was seen as my escape, really, because, you know, in school, I fitted in and I was just like everybody else and I didn't feel like, you know, the stuff that was going on at home, that was kind of like I didn't have to think about it because I could focus on my studies and focus on, you know, sort of the work I was doing.
Yeah.
And I had great friends in school. I had great teachers, apart from one, but I won't go into that.
There's always one. We can remember that you were like, ugh.
Yes, yeah, she was horrible. But all the rest of the teachers were great and very, very supportive. So I loved school and, you know, working and studying in school to me was a joy. And so, yeah, so I did come out with all my exams, all my O-levels, as it was that time, all those years ago. And I could have gone to university, but I chose not to because I wanted to be financially independent. So I took a job when I was 16.
Ladies of Liverpool.
So this first job, tell us about it. What did it lead you into? You've got your results. Off you go into the big wide world at 16. What did you do?
It was a job. I just applied for any jobs during the summer holidays. Mm-hmm. And it was a job with the council, working as a clerk. In the personnel office, like at the lowest rung of the ladder, just like pushing paper, basically.
Yeah.
But it was a job and it gave me financial independence and it meant that I could go on holidays with my friends and things like that, which was important to me to have that financial independence and to support my mum as well.
I was just thinking that. You took the words out of my mouth, I thought, and I bet you some of that paycheck went to your mum.
Oh, yeah, of course it did, of course. Because we all did that. Me and my brother and my sister all took jobs when we were 16 and so that we could help my mum out because at the end of the day, she'd struggled for a long, long time. Time bringing us up.
Yeah.
So I landed in the council and I thought, well, you know, it's a job, but yeah, I can get promoted and there's like, obviously there's loads of different departments.
Yeah.
So I ended up getting promoted and I went into the solicitors department and started working in child protection.
So how does that lead you into the police?
Well, I'll tell you now.
Go on, get us to that.
Well, I mean, what I didn't talk about was, like, obviously I mentioned growing up in Toxteth and we were living in Toxteth and Toxteth riots happened. Mm. I was racially abused by police officers coming onto the estate when we lived there. It was just horrendous the way they policed that community at that time. And I wasn't surprised the riots happened, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I had a severe and serious dislike of the police and a fear of the police, actually, because the came across to me as just racist bullies. So when I was doing this role with the local authority, I was a legal assistant. I'd studied my law exams and I was working in child protection. And I came across these two detectives who were working on child protection cases as well. And our paths crossed quite a lot with the cases that I was dealing with from the civil side and the cases they were dealing with from the criminal side. And we struck up a friendship, really. And they sort of used to say to me, oh, we think you should join the police, you'd be really good in the police. And I used to laugh in the face and go, you must be joking.
Because you had this opinion, didn't you?
Because I had that view and I thought, why would I ever want to join an organisation like that? You know, you must be joking. But these two guys were really nice, so I thought, well, there must be some nice people in there. So over the months and that we sort of developed our friendship, I thought, oh, go on then, get them off me back. Get me an application form, go on, let's see how far I get.
Yeah, how much do they pay? What's the pay? I'll do it.
But I didn't expect to get anywhere. I was just thought, oh, well, get them off me back. If I put it in and say, oh, well, I didn't get past the application, they could get off me back.
Because it's difficult to get into the police, isn't it? There's so many hurdles to get over.
It's a very, very long, protracted recruitment process. Yeah. Necessarily so, but it is very, very long. And I just thought, oh, well, you know, give it a go and throw it in and see how we get on. So I put the application form in. To do an entrance exam, which I flew. Then we had to have a series of interviews and then there's medicals and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And I passed everything and I was like, what do I do now?
Because you've got a job you quite like.
I enjoyed it. I was enjoying the job.
Yeah.
I really was enjoying the job. I mean, the promotion prospects were a little bit limited where I was and doing what I was doing. Mm. But I enjoyed it, you know, I enjoyed the work. So I was like, oh my goodness. So I had a massive dilemma. And I really didn't know what to do. I was like, you know, and I was speaking to everybody, my friends, my family, everybody, what should I do, what should I do?
And was there a fear, Irene, at this point, when it becomes a reality, a fear of, do I want to, you know, immerse myself into what I think I know about the police? Although people have changed their minds along the way, ultimately, you've still got these, you know, engraved memories in your head of growing up in Toxteth and what you believe the police were doing at that time and what you saw and what you heard. That must have been quite scary for you to then go, I'm actually crossing the line here.
Yeah.
I'm going on to the side where I don't fully believe what they were doing when I was around as a youngster was right.
Yeah. I mean, the police were viewed as the enemy and that, there's no doubt about that because they were at that time.
Yeah.
So there was a massive dilemma and there was a kind of a little bit of a fear around it. But also, because I'm not one for, you know, sort of being backwards and coming forwards. I like to rise to challenges. Yeah. And I just thought, you know what? Give it a go, because you can't judge it from the outside. Mm-hmm. You've got to judge it from the inside. And those two guys showed me that there are good people in there.
Yeah.
And I thought, just give it a go. And to be honest, I joined and said, I'm going to give it 3 years. And if I don't like it, I'm off.
Do something
I've got my legal qualifications. I can go back into law. Mm-hmm. You could always get back into the council at that time, because it was a job for life, dead secure. And if you'd worked there and you knew people or had family,
you can get back in. My Jay's been working at the council since he was like 18, and we're coming up towards 40 now.
Right.
And he's still there now. But like you say, it's a job that most people go through for life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And here's you stepping out and doing something totally different.
I just had to try and see. And also, it was more money.
Yeah. Go ahead, girl.
And it gave me the financial position to be able to buy my own place. So, I joined, and they posted me out in, Fazakerley. It was Lower Lane in Fazakerley.
Yeah.
Never been there. Didn't know where the place was.
South End to North End.
Exactly. So I had to do a recce of find out where I was. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. Where did all the black people? There's no one round there.
So when was this? What date? What year was this?
1991.
Okay, yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. So I was covering Fazakerley, Croxteth and Norris Green.
Mm.
I think there was one black family there in Croxteth at the time. And it was just like, oh God, what have I done? What have I done? So I just knew. I'm like being a black person, a black woman in uniform, because the police weren't really like doing with it out there as well. And I'm thinking, oh God, I'm going to get some shit here, aren't I? I'm going to get some shit. And I did. I was right, I did.
Ladies of Liverpool. Everything Liverpool. Everything for ladies.
I had some fantastic colleagues, some amazing colleagues. We all had each other's back. We all looked after each other.
Yeah.
There was one or two incidents, of racial abuse on the streets, as I expected, because of the area that I was working in. And there was a couple inside the station as well. One in particular was one of my training sergeants who was telling a racist joke, and I walked into the room and he didn't see me.
Oh.
And the punchline, and I was just like, oh God, here we go. And to be fair to him, when he turned around and saw me, I mean, he just went, oh my God, he went bright red. And he was like, can we have a word? He took me out the room and said, he apologised. I was really surprised he apologised, because I expected, like, don't you open your mouth, don't you say this, don't you say that.
No.
I expected to be threatened and stuff, because he was a sergeant. I was a sprog at that time, still in probation. I could have been got rid of at any time.
It's nice to know that he acknowledged what
Absolutely.
He did.
Absolutely, and I was really, that really, really impressed me, the fact that he acknowledged what he did, he apologised, he said he should never have done it and stuff like that. And I said, yeah, you should never have done it. And I said, not only that, but what kind of impression are you giving to those colleagues of mine that I've got to work with, that's okay to
do?
It's
a free-for-all,
Exactly. So I was really, really upset with that. So, but anyway, he apologised and he said, you know, if you want to make a complaint, you're well within your rights to. And I said, well, I don't want to make a complaint. I said, but if I hear it again, I really will. I'll go after your job. I said, I do not want to work in an environment like this.
And I bet you it wasn't just race that you were up against.
Oh, no, there was, oh God, the sexism was even more prevalent than the racism. I have to say the racism, there was one or two incidents that I can put my hand on and say that was definitely racist. There was treatments where you kind of get left out of things. That kind of came later in my career when I was rising up the ranks.
Right, okay.
But as a constable, my colleagues were amazing. I had amazing colleagues and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed it. But the sexism was...
Talk to me about that, because I'm a woman in radio and there's not many of us here, you know. So I work in a very male-dominated industry and have done for a long time now. And I love to hear from other women who can almost relate in a way to what I've possibly experienced over the years, but in a different, totally different field. So radio to the police.
Yeah.
Tell me about your side of the coin.
Well, for the first, I think it was first 2 or 3 years, I was the only female on my section, on my unit. And it's just like stupid little things, like, you know, being made to make the tea, or, you know, sort of you're the note taker if we're in a meeting, or, you know, anything to do with women and children. If we were like sort of out and about and, like, you know, we had to arrest someone who had kids or something. It's like, oh, Irene, you look after the kids. And I'm like, I don't even like kids. I'm not a mum.
No.
You're a dad. You've got kids. You look after the kids. You're
Makes
more
sense.
Experienced than
yeah.
I am. And that used to really, really frustrate me. I do like kids, by the way, now. I do.
She's got one.
And then I've got one. Then I was just not interested in kids or anything like that.
And how old were you at this point? You're only young, weren't you?
Well, I was 25. So
yeah,
I wasn't
early
20s. Yeah, I was in my early 20s.
And someone's going to look after the kids. You haven't got any. You've got no interest.
And I'm not interested.
That is an insult, isn't it?
And it was just like, oh, do you know what?
Yeah.
And then, like, oh God, being hit upon, I suppose, for want of a better phrase, because you're single, because I was single for the early part of my career. And I'd be getting hit on by married colleagues. And it's like, do you know what? You think I'm going to be your mistress? You think I'm going to be a bit on the side? I've got a bit more respect for myself than that.
And you would like to think the lads would make you feel safe.
But they did. Most of them did.
Yeah.
And there was one of my colleagues who said to me, he said, listen, I'm a little bit worried about this fella. So at the end, that friend, that colleague, put me in a taxi, said, I just want to put you in a taxi, make sure you get home all right. So I said, okay, so I got in a taxi, went home, went back to my flat, got ready for bed, made a cup of tea, as I did then.
Mm-hmm.
Next minute, there's a knock on my door, and I'm thinking, the hell's that? And the only time anyone knock on my door would be one of my neighbours if there's a problem.
Yeah.
And like there's been an issue or something like that and they want my help. Or it's someone knocking on my door because there's some bad news in the family, like a police officer. So
it's like when the phone rings at a certain time of night, you've got someone in the hospital, haven't you? Someone's dead, someone's in the hospital.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So your heart sinks.
So I was like, oh my God, what's happened? So I open the door and it's this fella and he just barges his way into my flat and I'm there in my dressing gown thinking, oh. What do we do now? What do we do now? So I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, I told you I wanted you and I'm not going anywhere. And I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So the thing that was going through my mind was like, you know, that, you know, rape thing.
Yeah.
Situation.
It was you thinking of punching him right in the throat.
Like I just said, I
looking
to stay
for
calm.
Weapons.
I was terrified. But
yeah,
I
you
would
be.
If I show fear, who knows what's going to happen. So I just said, you know what? I'm going to ring you a taxi and you're going to go home to your wife. And I'm not going anywhere. I said, you're going to be going home to your wife. So I rang a taxi and I said to the taxi firm, I said, tell the driver to come and knock on the door and come in the flat. I've got someone here that I need to get out. And they were like, right, we're on it, love, we're on it.
Yeah.
So anyway, the taxi driver turned up within minutes and he come, I'm not going anywhere. And I said, can you just please get him out of my house?
Yeah.
Please get him out. So he's like, come on, fella, come on, you've had a few mixed
what a legend the taxi driver
taxi
was.
Taxi driver was amazing, amazing.
Because you can imagine a lad out working the taxis thinking, I don't need that grief.
Absolutely,
what a man to come up the stairs.
Come in. And I was on ground floor.
He should be working for the police.
he should actually.
You should give him an application
Do you know what? He was amazing.
Yeah.
And I just dragged him out, threw him in the taxi and off he went. And I'm like that, oh my God. And we were off for a couple of days after that. And then when I went back into work and I saw him and he was like looking sheepish as anything.
I was going to say, I don't know who would feel worse, him or you going in that day.
He tried to pretend, he couldn't remember. He tried to pretend like, and he come in, I went into the, it was on scoff, like lunch break. And I went into the TV room and he come in and he went to walk out again. I went, you better come in and have a word. And he come in and I was like, I said, tell you what, you ever, ever do that to me again and I will be on the phone to your wife as fast as you like and tell her exactly what you're up to. Stay away from me. I don't want nothing to do with you. And he was like, I'm so sorry. He said, I was drunk. I didn't know what got into me. I don't know. And I'm like, that. Yeah, he may have been drunk because we were all drunk. I said, but I know what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was the end of that. Brushed it under the carpet. And we ended up being mates then at the end of it. Because he got the measure.
Yeah.
And we ended up being mates. Because he was a nice fella. That's the whole thing. I had a laugh with him. And he was a nice guy and I had no idea that
sometimes
was going on in his head.
It just takes the certain type of fella to misinterpret that.
Yeah.
And then as the only woman in your department, you're left facing whatever they've come up with in their head.
Exactly. And that was really, like I say, really scary for me because just think, you know, the colleagues, I got on with them like a house on fire. We had a good banter, we had a good laugh, we had a great social life.
Yeah.
And I wasn't expecting it to turn into that.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't.
Ladies of Liverpool.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
At what point then did you end up becoming the first black female inspector?
It was about 12 years into my career because I took, you have to take your exams. I took my sergeant's exam, passed the sergeant's exam, got promoted to sergeant, and then I didn't want to stop there. I wanted to do my inspector's exam, so I took them pretty much probably within 2 years of passing to sergeant because it takes time. You have the written exam, then you have a practical exam, and you know, you might fail and stuff like that.
And were your colleagues all supporting you at this time, all the male colleagues around you?
Yeah, everybody was supportive, really supportive,
And when you got the role, do you feel like you're totally accepted or did you put a few noses out of joint?
Well, you always put noses out of joint.
Yeah.
And you don't work with the same team because you always get moved, you see, when you get promoted. So I'd moved around the force quite a bit by this stage. So I'd worked with a number of different teams. But when I got promoted to sergeant, they moved me to the Wirral. No, sorry, I went into professional standards, that's right, professional standards, which investigates like complaints against police and stuff like that. So I dealt with that. And then I got moved to the Whittle, where I'd never worked as a sergeant in Birkenhead. So I had a new team, and you know, and there were a couple of like sort of what we used to call old arse bobbies, like long in service bobbies,
yes,
who like thought you were like a bit wet behind the ears and tried to like, yeah, you know, sort of like pull the wool over your eyes and stuff like that. And I had to take a couple of them to task and go, listen, I might look young, but been to the University of Life, do not try and pull one on me because you won't get away with it.
And I love that there'll be women listening to this now going, that happened to me in my workplace. Might be the police, but yeah, in any line of work,
yeah,
once you start doing well and then you've got people who've been there a long time and they're not accustomed to change, because lots of people don't like change.
Absolutely.
Or anything new.
Yeah.
So, you know, people all over the city in every line of work, they're dealing with this.
Yeah.
So would you advise that that's what they do, in your words, take people to task, stand strong?
Do you know what? Absolutely, because I was quite intimidated, because these are fellas that are very, very well respected. They've been on that team for years, donkey's years. Everybody loved them. And here's me coming in new from Liverpool. Yeah. So I was seen as an outsider anyway. And I'm a woman, and then I'm black. Bloody hell. And I was thinking, what do you... Because you can't allow in a... You know, because he tried to undermine me when I was doing a briefing, a morning briefing. When you come on duty, you do a briefing, like, this is what we're looking at, this is what we're looking at today, you know, named offenders, these are hot spots and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there was something I was talking about, and he started, well, I think that's rubbish, that, and I think that. And he kept interrupting me on the parade, and everyone was like that. You know, there he is, going on again.
I can feel a fire in my belly as you're talking about it.
And I was thinking, what do you do with this? What do you do? And I thought, flip it, I can't let him get away with it. But I don't want to make a big deal in front of everybody either. You know, I don't want to lose my rag in front of everybody. Yeah. So I just said, can we park that there? We'll have a word after the parade, but I'm going to carry on with the parade so people can get out and do the job, okay? But I'll see you after parade. And he was like, oh. So I carried on with the parade and I sent everybody off. And I said, right, come on, let's go and have a word in the office. And I got him in the office and said, what's your problem? And he was like, well, I said, no, what's your problem? Tell me what your problem is. And he was like, well, I just wanted to make a point of. And I said, okay. I said, I have that you make a point. I said, but you do not interrupt my parade. When I'm giving a briefing, do not interrupt me. If you've got an issue, you can say to me, Sarge, can I have a word with you outside? And then I'll have a word with you outside.
Yeah.
But do not interrupt my parade. It's my parade. And what I say goes, okay? And
he's like, Irene.
Yeah, Sarge. Okay, off you go on your parade. And then there was another incident with another old arse Bobby, who'd basically he'd done something that he shouldn't have done. It wasn't against the law or anything like that.
Right, just against policy or procedure.
Out of, you know, he shouldn't have done. And I'm like, oh, I'm not having that. So we get him in, and at the end of the night shift, I was like, can we have a word? So I took him to one side, and this guy I really did like and I really did respect, and he was very well respected. And, you know, it was a surprise to me that he'd done this thing that he'd done. And so I brought him in. I said, listen, I've got to lay the law down to you. I said, that what you did was totally and utterly unacceptable, and these are the reasons why. And I reeled off a whole list of reasons why he shouldn't have done what he should have done.
Yeah.
Public perception, you know, all the kind of stuff that was around it. And
we're all now in our heads making things up. I've got him like weeing in the alleyway and getting caught and stuff like that.
I'm not going to say.
You can't say.
Is.
But for the rest of us, we can all just come up with something creative in our heads. Some more creative than others, I imagine. So go on, you've given him down the bank.
We had words anyway, and I told him, I said, I do not want to see or hear about anything like that ever again. I don't care what you've done before. I don't want to see or hear anything like that again. And he walked out with his tail. He wasn't happy, and he walked out with his tail between his legs. And anyway, it was about 3 weeks later or something like that. He come in and he said, can I have a word? I was like, yeah, come on, have a word. And he went, I just wanted to say that, what is it? I've got the utmost respect for you. I've got the utmost respect for you or something, because you took me to task and you told me what I needed to know. But not only told me what I needed to know, but you told me why I needed to know it and why it was wrong for me to do that. And he said, nobody's ever done that to me before. He said, people have like tried to shout me down and stuff like that, but nobody's ever explained to me the reason why. And the fact that you did that and you took the time out to do that, he said, you know, he said, you've got my utmost respect. And if anyone tries to give you a hard time, he said, they'll have me to deal with.
Oh, unexpected or what?
God. It was so lovely.
I can understand him because really you do lovely. Have a way about you. That's when you meet Irene, if you ever get the chance to meet Irene, she's got a way about her. And I can't explain what it is, but just certain people have it and you've got it. Aww. And it's led you into what you're doing next. So you've got your own business now, haven't you? You've created your own business. Tell us about the business you are a founder and director of.
Yeah. It's basically, it's a coaching and consultancy business. So I do a lot of work around confidence building, working with individuals. I do workshops around overcoming barriers and resilience. And I also do workshops around equality and diversity and leadership development. So I've worked with a load of different organisations from private sector to public sector.
Yeah.
I work with individuals as well as groups and I've worked in schools as well. I do a lot of motivational speaking.
Well, I'd never guess.
At a number of events. Which, you know, it's funny because I never set up to do that.
Mm.
But I did a talk for the Women's Org, about 3 years ago. And I think it was International Women's Day.
Yes.
And then on the back of that, I got asked to do talks for, I got approached by the Liverpool Ladies Network. I did a talk for them.
Yeah.
And then on the back of that, people who've heard me talk have asked, oh, can you come into our organisation, solicitors firms, accountancy firms, can you come and do, you know, we've got a networking event, we want you to come and talk at this event. And then the kind of motivational talking has just gone on leaps and bounds. And I'm like, oh, I did start off to do this, but if that's what you want, that's
yeah,
what I'll
is
do,
it like
sort of
Q&A
thing.
Stuff, or you just stand up and tell your story?
It's a I tell my story, and then and have a number of themes because some of them might be around equality and diversity and unconscious bias and positions of privilege and stuff. That's one of the talks I do.
Yeah,
I also do talks around, you know, your self concept and how you can be your own worst enemy in terms of your advancement and reaching your own goals,
right,
and
okay.
helping people to unpick some of the negative. Messages that have been given to them growing up and how they've internalised that and how that makes them perform or not perform in the workplace now.
Wow.
So I do a lot of work around self-concept and resilience and overcoming barriers and getting through barriers and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's all for me. It's about helping people to be the best that they can be and to develop and to basically reach the goals and achieve what they want to achieve for themselves.
Do you think, you know, your job with Merseyside Police led you down this path, as in you've worked with people of all in all different situations, all different backgrounds?
Yeah.
You've seen, and I know some of the things you'll have seen will have been really hard hitting, things you probably will never ever forget.
Yeah.
You've been on the front line, you've seen that. Would you say that's where you got this drive to go out and make a difference once you completed your time at the police?
I think, yeah, because all the way through that, you're seeing things that you'd rather not see. You're doing things, you know, it's one of those jobs where you have to draw on every aspect of your character to deal with some of the things that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
And it really does make you resilient and it really does make you strong, because if you weren't, you wouldn't last.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't last through it. And I'm not just talking about dealing with some of the things, the horrible things you see on the streets and the people you have to deal with on the streets, but also the culture within the organisation and some of the things and the barriers you have to deal with, you know, inside where you're passed over time and time again for promotion, and they're promoting white men, and you know the women and the ethnic minorities aren't getting a look in. So having those battles as well, internally, but it certainly did, because I worked for had a Black Police Association, and I was chair for a while and then deputy chair, and through that I used to support people when they were like, oh, I want to go for promotion and stuff like that. Well, you can do it. Let's sit down and see what you need to do, how to work it out, and we'd get you there.
Yeah.
And I mentored and coached quite a lot of people within the organisation. And then I developed a leadership programme. I did a master's degree in leadership, and I developed a leadership programme to try and recruit more women and more ethnic minorities and more minority groups to the police.
So what did that involve? You going out and physically getting people to join the police?
Going into the community and going, right, we need more diverse people in the police. I'd go into Toxteth, you know, obviously where I grew up, and I knew the issues in Toxteth. I'm thinking,
who better
to get in there?
Who better to send in than someone who knows exactly what everyone's thinking?
Exactly. And I've been there, and I'm not telling you the story that the police are great and that the police are fantastic and we've got it all right, because we haven't. You know, I know there's issues with stop search disproportionality. I know about the issues of growing up in the Toxteth riots. I've been there, lived it, dreamt it. But if you do not join, you can't change it from within, and you can't educate from within. And that's what we need, because if we want to police to diverse communities, we have to have a diverse force so that you can understand those communities.
That's powerful stuff, then.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely. So for me, that was like, why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we doing this? So the chief gave me free rein to go and into the basically to develop this program. I worked for community engagement and to get into the communities, and I worked with our other support networks, because we had an LGBT support network, we had disability support network, and I used all their contacts as well and said, this is what I'm going to do. It's a 1 week leadership program. I designed the program, and then afterwards they get a mentor for 12 months from our minority police officers for 12 months, who will support them through the application process, give them the tools and the information that they need about, you know, about the process. Because most of these people haven't got like relatives or friends in the police.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because like the reason why we have such a white male police force is because most of them have got dads in the police or brothers in the police or uncles in the police. They've got inside knowledge because they can tell them what the process is like.
And that's where you think it was falling down?
And that's where it's fallen down, because people who haven't got those connections haven't got that knowledge and they aren't prepared for what the recruitment process is like in the police. So we were just like giving them that knowledge and giving them that, you know, putting them on the level playing field and giving them that knowledge. This is the process of the recruitment. This is the recruitment process. This is what you need to do. This is what evidence looks like. This is the experience you need to bring. And they can prepare themselves then for the application process.
Priceless.
And most of them, a lot of them got through and joined either as special constables, PCSOs, or regular constables. So for me, it was a programme that was definitely worthwhile running.
And so successful.
Yeah, and so much so that other forces heard about it and wanted to do the same thing in their forces. So I went round to other forces and told them a little bit about what we were doing, what the programme was, and then they took it on board in their own way. With their resources, the resources that they had. But a lot of forces took it on board as well.
I can imagine you were like a legend to a lot of people.
I don't know
you've changed people's lives. You've gone out and you've reached out to people, guided them into something that they might not have done.
Mm.
But if they're having successful careers themselves... Mm. Now,
yeah, we've had a few successes. The fact that we had our first Polish police officer recruited through the programme.
Oh, go on.
And he's applying for the fast track to inspector. We had another guy who was in the disability group. He had dyslexia and he was a special con, and he didn't think he could ever join as a regular constable because he was like, oh, I've got dyslexia, I can't like write the report and I can't. And I said, well, there's reasonable adjustments that we have to put in place to help you.
That's what you wouldn't know, would you? You would just think you couldn't do it.
He's an inspector in Cheshire now. And it's like, oh my God, he got on the fast track and he's now flying. And it's like, goodness gracious. But this is the thing. If you just invest in people and you just give them that support, people can do it. You know what I mean? They will do it, because if they've got the passion for it, they will just do it. You know, you're just guiding them. You're just supporting them. You're just giving them a bit of a helping hand, and they do it for themselves. But unless we do that for people and show them the role models within the organisation, and that's what I like to do with my business as well, showing people that, you know, if you can't see a role model, then be the role model.
Yeah.
You get yourself up there. Because that's what I did. I didn't have any role models.
No.
But I just wanted to get through the ranks. I wanted to get as high as I could. I wanted to get more money. And I wanted to have power.
She didn't want much.
To be a mom.
She doesn't want much. You are a total inspiration. Honestly, and I know people will be loving what you're saying. And hopefully, if you take it on board and you want to speak to Irene personally, you can message us on Twitter. Tell everyone how they can find you.
Well, I'm on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn as well, under Irene Affle. I've also got my business, which is Amatrine Enterprise Solutions. Bit of a mouthful.
Slightly.
But Amatrine's a crystal. But Amatrine Enterprise Solutions, you can get in touch with me through the website. You can email me through the website. I'm all over social media. So have a look, message me.
Definitely do. And let's just keep lifting each other, especially us women. This is what we should be doing right now. Lifting each other, empowering each other, and pushing ourselves and each other to do amazing things. If you need a proof, you've just heard from Irene. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Irene, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Subscribe now
via the iTunes Store.
Hear more from the Ladies of Liverpool
via ladiesofliverpool.com.